Ezra. Turn to Ezra chapter 4. You know, some people are known to be starters of things and then be quitter of that same thing. So maybe they pick up a hobby and they really get into their hobby and they're into it for 2-3 weeks and then it's like, And they're all excited and they're all great about it and they're telling everybody about it and they really want excited, really want to do it and all that good stuff. And they quit. And they have various reasons for why they quit. Maybe sometimes it's because somebody made fun of them, like, you started knitting? You're cross-stitching? You're running? Or whatever the case may be. And you feel some kind of pressure to where, like, you know what? I don't have to put up with that. Or maybe somebody comes along, maybe it's mom or dad, and they say, you are not doing that in my house. You aren't having this pet. You aren't doing this with your bedroom. You aren't doing that. That's the law. And so you quit. You give up on it. Well, we've all experienced that in some microcosm of our life. But the Jews, they experienced that in a great sense. As we just read from Ezra chapter 1, there was a decree when the Jews were let out of captivity, out of Babylonian captivity, that they were sent back to Jerusalem for a purpose. And the purpose was to build the house of the Lord and to rebuild the city, the walls of Jerusalem. Now, why do I say that's a purpose? This year, this quarter, right, we're talking about fulfilling my purpose in the church. And what we have is people going back to build the house of the Lord. And Michael, as he pointed out this morning, he's probably going to talk more about building a house, the spiritual house. But in the Old Testament, we're going to see them actually build a house. So they go back and they get back and the king sends all this goods and everybody is excited. They build part of the wall. They lay the foundation for the temple. And the people are excited. They are shouting for joy. And the old timers who had seen the temple before, they're in fact crying because it's not as glorious as the one that was before. But yet they're building. But I want you to pick up there in Ezra chapter 4 and in verse 4. Then the people of the land discouraged the people of Judah and made them afraid to build. And they bribed counselors against them to frustrate, here it is, their purpose. And all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia, they did not work. You see what happened? They knew what their purpose was. They were doing their purpose. Then along came these other people of their land who didn't want them to fulfill their purpose. You know what they did? So they paid them, right? They paid these people off. You go and you frustrate them. They sent a letter to the king, and they kind of made it sound like, oh, this people, they always, if they build this city, they're going to rebel against. And we go from building the wall very slowly and all of the fireworks and the grandeur and the beauty of everything that is going on to it just dies. It all comes to a stop. And they knew what their purpose was. Several, many years later, they changed their mind. They finished the wall. And you know how many days it takes them to finish the wall? We talked about this Wednesday night in class. 52 days to finish the outside of the wall of Jerusalem. Why did they change their mind? Why did they get back into fulfilling their purpose? And I want to note four observations from the book of Nehemiah. If you'll turn there, Ezra and Nehemiah, they happen at the same time. Ezra is a priest. Nehemiah is a cupbearer. The other prophets at this time would be Zechariah and Haggai. And I'm not going to go into all the history of this. But Nehemiah is the guy who comes back and he leads the people in building the wall. And I want to make four observations from Nehemiah. Three of them are about Nehemiah. So it might be, you might say, three observations about being a leader of changing people's minds. The fourth would be an observation about the people. And we all, whether we consider ourselves a leader, we consider ourselves a follower, at various times we are both. And so it fits into all of us in this way. And I want you to notice this very first one. In Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah, as we said, he is the cupbearer to the king. He's got a close relationship with the king. But he hasn't been in a few days because word has come to him, because the people from Jerusalem are there, and he says, man, how's everybody doing back home in Jerusalem? In verse 3, the word is not good. The people are shamed. The wall is broken down. Its gates are destroyed by fire. Here's the first thing that Nehemiah does. He takes personal responsibility. Notice verse 4. As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. And I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. He heard about his brothers back there, and he didn't say, oh man, that's too bad for them. It affected him. It affected him so much in chapter 2 that when he is before the king, notice what the king says to him in verse 2. The king said, why is your face sad? Seeing you're not sick, you're not sick. Why are you so sad, buddy? There's nothing but sadness of heart. And he was much afraid to tell him what was going on. Because it was that king's predecessor who said, don't rebuild the wall. Nehemiah felt very strongly for his people. We'll notice in a second that he's going to take sin as a personal responsibility in all of this, as we will look at our second point. But he takes this upon himself because he felt for his people. And he's like, I've got to go do this. Notice in chapter 2 that after he gets permission from the king to leave the king's service as cupbearer for a period of time and go to rebuild the wall, notice what he says in verse 11. So I went to Jerusalem and I was there for 3 days. And then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me, and I told no one, and here it is, what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. You know what he thought? He thought God wanted him to do this. The wall had been sitting there long enough, and you could cross-reference to what we read in Ezra 1. The command was to rebuild the wall. God had told them to do that. But yet here they are, and the wall is sitting. There is no protection. And he felt that he had to do it. Remember what Michael talked about? Was it last Sunday? For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. His heart was in Jerusalem. His heart was rebuilding that. And he didn't just say, you know what, I'll send some money from afar and I'll take care of that. He took it upon himself to go. He went. He felt that God had put it there in his heart. Now I also want you to notice that when they're building, go to chapter 6. There are many other adversaries that arise as they're actually rebuilding after Nehemiah gets back into Jerusalem. There's Sanballat and there's Tobiah. And they're causing all kinds of problems. And there's kind of like armies out there to get them. And there's all these problems that are going on. And they want to talk with Nehemiah. We might say they want to get him away from the work. But what they really want to do is get him away from the work and to do him harm. I want you to see here in chapter 6, in verse 2, you can see that they were going to do him harm. But notice verse 3, they said, come out and meet us in this place. And he says in verse 3, I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? You know what Nehemiah thought would happen if he stopped working on the wall? The whole thing would stop. That the people would not do it. He says, why should I leave? I'm doing a great work. This is my purpose. This is what I'm supposed to do. Why leave that and go talk to you adversaries? There was no need for him to do that. He leaves, the work quits. He didn't want that. He didn't come for that to happen. But I want you also to notice one more thing about him. He's a governor. They elect him governor. Go here to chapter 5. They elect him governor. In verse 14, you can see that he is governor for 12 years. Alright, so I'm about to be here for 4 years. Michael's been here almost 12 years. So let's say for 12 years, This is what Nehemiah does. Go down to verse 17, or verse 16. I also persevered in the work on this wall, and we acquired no land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. And moreover, there were at my table 150 men, Jews and officials, besides those who came to us from the nations that were around us. Now, what was prepared at my expense for each day was one ox and six choice sheep and birds, and every 10 days, all kinds of wine in abundance. Yet for all this, I did not demand the food allowance of the governor, because the service was too heavy on this people. 12 years, he provided his own food. And not only his own food, he provided it for 150 other people. Why? Because the burden was too hard on that people. We have the Apostle Paul doing similar things in the New Testament where he could be supported as an evangelist, but he didn't take that because of what it would do to them or to show an example to them. Nehemiah did this for 12 years, providing for 150 people. And the people knew he wasn't taking any money. Think there's any people who are questioning his motives? Is he doing it for the check? He's doing it because he feels for his people, because he recognizes it that it's his purpose, and he wants to do it and finish it. That's observation number one. He took personal responsibility. Observation number two, I want you to go with me now to chapter one, back to it. This is very common with Nehemiah. Remember, he heard that the wall was down and that the city was burned and the gates and all that were down and the people were troubled. And he mourned for days, right? And he sat down fasting, and we see in verse 4, and praying. We see Nehemiah praying a ton. We see him praying in chapter 1. We see him praying in chapter 2. We see him praying in chapter 8. We see him praying in chapter 4. We see him praying in chapter 6. We just see him praying everywhere. Chapter 5, we just see him praying everywhere. Because he is a man, he is a leader who understands he needs God. He's got this purpose, but without God, he can't do this. And so one of the first things that he needed God for was to pardon the sins of the people and to remember the promises that he had made, and by he, that is God. Go with me now to chapter 1. I'm going to pick up in the middle of his prayer. I want you to notice verse 6. He said, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you, notice this, day and night for the people of Israel, your servants. If I'm praying for Israel, how often? Day and night. Why? Confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which they have sinned. No? That's not what it says, does it? Which we have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. Do you see a guy who is too high and too mighty? You see a guy who recognizes we've all sinned against you. Even me, and maybe his family was a noble family and my family, we sinned. We need you. And now verse 8, remember the word that you commanded your servant Moses, that if you're unfaithful, I'll scatter you. But I'll bring you back. Now go down to verse 10, or the end of verse 9. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I have chosen, that they may dwell there. God, you promised you would scatter us, and you did. God, you also promised that if we returned, you would send us back to the place, and that place being Jerusalem, that we may dwell there. Why aren't we dwelling there? Remember what you said. Well, of course, God's going to answer that, right? He not only needed God to pardon them and to remember what he had promised, he also needed God, as he felt it, to get permission of the king. He's got a job to do for the king, right? What's he doing every day? He's testing the wine to make sure that no one's poisoning the king. And he's bringing it to him. And he's got a very important job, a very trusted position. But yet his heart is not there right now. His heart is with his people in Jerusalem. So what does he need? He needs God to help him. We have a very short prayer that is in chapter 2. But when the king asked him what's so sad there in chapter 2, the king said, verse 4, what are you requesting? And he said, so I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you may send me to Judah, the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. I don't think it was a very long prayer. If the king says, what are you asking? And his response is, I want to go back to Jerusalem to help to build the wall. But yet, he still did not forget God in all of that time. Not only did he need God's help for that, he needed it to restart the building. Remember, that's why he's going back. They had started it and then they had stopped and been commanded by the king not to do it. And so when he goes back in chapter 2 there are haters. They find out again, Sanballat and Tobiah, they find out that they're there to rebuild it, and they're out there mocking them and they hate them. And so they go down and notice verse 20. Then I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build. But you, those who are causing the trouble, you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem. He didn't say, man, we're going to be so good, we're just going to come down here and we're going to handle this. With our God, we will arise and build it. What everyone was hearing. He wasn't doing it on his own. He was doing it with the help of God. But you know what he does with these haters, as we call them in our modern vernacular? He doesn't just say, God, just let them be. We'll take care of them. Or, man, they're really annoying. Go to chapter 4 and what he prays about them. He prays that God would avenge them. That God would take, and I'm going to use the word vengeance on them. Verse 4. Because they said at this time, they're like, oh man, these walls are weak. And you remember, if a fox runs into the wall, it's going to fall over. These walls are so weak, they'll never stay. There's cracks all in it. It's the weakest thing in the world. These people don't know what they're doing. And by the way, you remember Wednesday night, who was building the wall? The high priest. Daughters of nobility. Perfumers. Goldsmiths. Not masons. Not your normal wall builders. And here's what Nehemiah prays to God. Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders. I'll just let them be. Then they're really annoying. Where should get rid of them? No. You send them off as captives. You send us off. You send them. Don't forget. You think, what? That's pretty harsh. But they had a purpose to do. And they were causing and getting in the way of them fulfilling their purpose. But of course they needed perfection from these people. In fact, they bring these armies kind of against them. And they come up with this plan that, okay, half the men are going to work, half the men are going to stand guard. Okay, and then half of you who are working, you're going to have a hammer in one hand, you're going to have a sword in the other. You're going to be multitasking. Because why? They got a purpose to build the wall. But they didn't say, you know what, our army is going to do it. Go down to verse chapter 4. Here in the same chapter, verse 9. So they came against them in verse 9, and we prayed to our God and set a guard as a protection against them day and night. They weren't relying just on the strength of their army that they could put out there. We cried to God. Notice verse 15 as well. When our enemies heard it, by the way, that their plan was thwarted, when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had frustrated their plan to stop them, we all returned to the wall, each one to his work, because God stopped it. God put an end to it. And so when the people, they get tired. And they cry out in chapter 4, we're tired. The burden is too strong. And they call for him 10 times. Notice what he says for the people to do. Go there in chapter 4. It's actually chapter 6 and verse 16. And I jumped ahead to the next point, so you'll have to go with me. Chapter 6 and verse 16, when the wall is concluded. And remember, they had been building this wall for a lot of years. And then now in 52 days, they complete it. Notice verse 16. And when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. You have a cupbearer, high priest, perfumers, goldsmiths, daughters of nobility, building a wall in 52 days. That doesn't happen without God. And never once did Nehemiah say, I'll protect you. I'll build this thing for you. They needed the help of God. Third observation is that he didn't do it for himself. He did it for the people. Go back to chapter 5 there. And again, in this prayer to God about how he had given up all this stuff, remember where he had provided for these 150 men of his food and all of these various things? He says in verse 19, remember for my good, O my God, all that I have done for this people. So what didn't he do? Well, one, he didn't take the food. And not only did he not take the food, he provided for the food, right? But also back up in verse 16, and we read it a moment ago, he said, as I persevered in the work on this wall, we acquired no land. He didn't get any benefit, any territory down there. He didn't come down there to build a house for himself. He came down there to build a house for the people and for the Lord. So you can't again accuse him of going down there and just saying, oh, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to rule those people. I'm going to take this big old land, this big old house, and I'm going to get it all from me. He didn't do it for that. He did it for the people. I want you to notice something else. Remember that when they had the soldiers out there, they didn't leave day or night. They were in the city the whole time as they were sitting out. And you know who didn't leave? Nehemiah. Go back there to chapter 4 of Nehemiah. And notice that he didn't stay. Notice why he doesn't leave, right? Oh, go down. The verse that I'm looking for is verse 19. And I said to the nobles, to the officials, and to the rest of the people, the work is greatly spread, great and widely spread, and we are separated on the wall far from one another. In the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us, and our God will fight for us. So we labored at the work, and half of them with spears, they broke at dawn, they came out. And I said to the people at that time, let every man and his servant pass the night within Jerusalem, that they may be on guard for us by day and night. And here was the verse I was actually looking for. So neither I, nor my brothers, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me, none of us took off our clothes. Each kept his weapon at his right hand. Who's there all the time working and ready? The leaders. They are there day and night. He wasn't going to do it and leave them out to dry. And maybe the thing that I find most interesting about all this, he didn't tell anybody he was coming to Jerusalem. He shows up in chapter 2 and he gets permission from the king, but he just shows up and he comes down. And think about when a natural disaster has happened. Take Hurricane Sandy, right? The president went, right? But we were all notified and we were all alerted beforehand that the president is going to be going on the helicopter and he's going to go oversee all this. And they got the big old thing of when they're going to come in with the governor and they're all going to look over and they're going to say, oh yeah, it's a disaster zone and blah, blah, blah. It's going to cost a lot of money. And somebody else will do that later on, but we're behind you, we're resilient, all that stuff, right? Anybody get rah-rah about that? Oh, it's like, yeah, another politician showing up, making a press appearance, right? Notice when Nehemiah shows up into town. Notice verse 11. Actually, verse 12. Then I arose in the night, I and a few men. And there was no animal with me. Verse 13. I rode by night. And verse 14. I went to the fountain in the king's pool, but there's no room for the animal. So he's looking for a place to go in the city. He can't find it. Verse 15. I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall. And I turned back. Now here it is, verse 16. So he goes, what time of the day? Night. They got electricity, right? Right outside the city of Jerusalem? No? Right? They don't have any electricity. He's having trouble seeing. Oh, everyone's awake at night, right? So they all know that he's in town? They all give him a big parade? No? Verse 16. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work. He didn't show up from Persia being like, yeah, I'm coming to save you. He showed up from Persia saying, I'm here to work. Are you going to join me? That's what we got to do. And so when it came right down to it, that's what he asked the people to do. They come to him 10 times in chapter 4. And they're saying, we are tired. The burden is too great for us, we might say. Notice what he says for them to do in 14. I looked and arose and said to the nobles and the officials and the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And fight for yourself. No, hold on. Fight for your brothers. Fight for yourself. No. Fight for your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Don't do it for yourself. Do it for everyone else. But what was the very first thing? Remember the Lord. So what are the people? Here's the observation about the people. They want Look at there in chapter 4. You're still there. Look at verse 6. So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Nehemiah wasn't the only one who was interested in rebuilding and fulfilling the purpose that God had given him. The people wanted to do that. And when they got tired and when they got wore out, they knew where to go for assistance. They went to Nehemiah. And what did Nehemiah point them to? We just read it. Remember the Lord your God. What made them change their mind? Would I change my mind if I was one of those people? And the king said, don't do it. And I hadn't been doing it for a while, but I knew I was supposed to do it. Would it change my mind if someone wanted to do it? They came in and they're just like, we're going to do this. Think I might jump on board? Yeah, I might be a little more inclined. Or what if someone came in and they made sure that we knew that God was important in all of this? That they weren't the one who was like, this is all about me, this is about, we need God in this. And so we're going to pray to God about this. And I'm going to pray to God for you about this. And when times get tough, I'm going to pray to God about that. Might think a little more about it. Or what if we had a leader who worked for me? We know that he comes in not to glorify himself or herself. And we see him come in and then they just want to work. They just want to do it. And they don't even care who gets the credit. They don't care if they're seen because they'll do it at night. And they won't tell anybody that they're doing it. They just do it because it's in their heart to do it. Would I change my mind and start fulfilling my purpose and getting back to work on the thing in which I started? Or am I going to let the decrees of man and the insults of man deter me from fulfilling my God-given purpose? I would like to suggest to you that this is not only about the church. We have a leader who is that very thing. On Friday night, we looked in Hebrews chapter 2. And there is a phrase in Hebrews chapter 2 that is quoted several different ways of the author of salvation, or the founder of salvation, or the captain of salvation, in bringing many sons to glory. Right? And we talked about that this morning. You know what that word means? Leader. We have a leader of salvation, Jesus. And did Jesus work for me? Yeah. What about John 10? I lay down my life for the sheep so that they may have life and have it more abundantly. Jesus did that, didn't he? Did Jesus pray for me? John 17, I pray not only for you, but I pray for those who would believe through you. Does Jesus do anything now for us at the right hand of God? He intercedes for us. He is the high priest. He goes to God on our behalf. He's praying with me and for me to the Father. And did Jesus want to do all of that? Did Jesus want to come down? Absolutely. He took responsibility. You remember that passage in Philippians 2? He took on the form of a servant. He did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but he emptied himself. That was him doing it. Not being made to do it. He willingly emptied himself. And so therefore he took our responsibility upon him. By his stripes we are healed. In his body on the tree he bore our sin. So do you have a mind to get back to fulfilling the purpose? You may not see a leader like Nehemiah right here in this midst. Maybe you can become a leader like Nehemiah right here in this midst. But you've got a leader that's telling you, you've got a purpose. I'll do it with you. Don't forget me. Let's do it. Will you change your mind and do it? That's what the year is about. If you are subject to the invitation in any way this evening, we'd ask that you would come now as we stand and as we sing.